I'd like to kind of speak a little bit on a couple of different things before I actually get into maybe the politics of the war. And maybe just sharing with you, and maybe it's because I feel I can do this, because a lot of you, I sit in your at your kitchen tables, I sit around at coffee shops, and this is a very personal thing, but at the same time, I watched while people put their hands up, and I kind of figured that was that would probably be the case. Most people here are not veterans of war. And in July of 1965, I joined the Marine Corps. At that particular time, and as Bill described right here, I lived in Decatur, Illinois. I actually lived in a boys' home. The way out for most of us, because when you came out of the home, wasn't the fact that you were going to walk into college. And I would say 80-90% of the young men, boys, whatever, went into the service. And it didn't have anything to do with the fact that the military was, a war going on or being brave or anything. It was just kind of the natural progression of things for us as people coming out of that situation. But on the same time, I don't think I could ignore the fact that as growing up, and especially in a very kind of disciplined type of almost military atmosphere, that I remember seeing quite frequently the John Wayne movies about the World War II and the Korean War and all the glamour and, you know, the heroic steps that were being taken and the Hollywoodness about wars. And I think the reason it's important to mention, because that is why they put them out. That is why George Bush or people from his staff went to Hollywood more recently, right after 9/11, and said, this is what the agenda is. And if anybody kind of checks out the movies or the TV, it's a very strong, you know, pro-government, pro-war, the pro-CIA. I mean, you know, it's the whole thing, the whole apparatus of the government. And that's scary. And it's scary because at the same time, just like the experience I went through, it wasn't only what I was seeing on Saturday afternoon, but it was also going into the classroom, how the history was taught and what wasn't talked about. And that whole perspective you get as a young adult. Just like a lot of other people at 17 years old, you kind of believe the government is doing the right thing, and you've seen enough movies, listen to your history teachers, or in fact, at that particular time, just about anybody in power. And I'm not saying, I don't think it's that much really different now when it really comes down to. I mean, when you look to the senators, you listen to the religious people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're the ones that promote these things, type of actions. And so I went in believing that that was what was, you know, where I should be. Shortly after finishing up basic camp, I ended up in Vietnam. I went over. I was with the Marines, as I said. I was in the infantry. I spent approximately 18 months there. I've seen a lot of things. And 18 months is a kind of an unusual number. And I think the reason I bring that up, and you also might notice in the tour or the notes, that I actually did two tours over there. Between what the government had done prior to the war, and that's what I look at it as an offense on my mind as far as their propaganda, but as I went through boot camp, there's a certain amount of young boys that go in. And I would assume now, because women are in the military, there's a certain attitude going in. Not only this is the right thing to do, But this it's almost like you're passing the thresholds from youth into to manhood. And when I went to Vietnam in the first 13 months, as horrible as it was, there had been no determination. Now, we don't quit in this country, right? We always win. I mean, that's the message. And so I signed up for 6 more months. After spending approximately 18 months over there, I kind of crashed. I'd been wounded a couple times, seen a lot of things. Some very dear friends of mine that were in my outfit got hit pretty bad. Anyway, I was evacuated. Not because I was wounded physically. I just couldn't deal with it anymore. I couldn't deal with seeing people die. I couldn't deal with seeing children die. Walking through villages, couldn't deal with it anymore. But I ended up in the hospital in Philadelphia for approximately 60 days. Less than 48 hours after leaving the hospital, I reported into Camp Lejeune. I signed a waiver to go back to Vietnam because I didn't feel I had completed what I needed to complete it, that I hadn't lived up to the expectations of being that Marine, that man, that what society expected out of me. And so I spent another year over there. The first 7 months, somehow I kind of got through it. In fact, I was a sergeant. I was in recon at this time. And this was during 1968, during the Tet. It was in Khe San, Hue, a couple other places. But before it was all over, in my last months, again, I was having a very difficult time dealing with it. But instead of keeping it in, it came out. And the way it came out was I refused, basically. Just ignored the officers. We had a squad wiped out, and I literally got in a pounding contest on it just like that. Ended up being court-martialed before it was said and done. I ended up 30 days in the brig in Da Nang and was busted from a sergeant down to a private. And end up eventually coming back to the United States. The bad thing is that what you see over there and what you feel over there, you can't talk about. I mean, I expressed it in certain ways, but it wasn't nearly anything of 2.5 years of this stuff building up and what I'd seen and everything. Of course, the only help at that time, too, was basically zero. Your options was to go into the VA system. And electrical shock treatment was how they dealt with people with post-traumatic stress, or they put you on trazodone. And I'm not sure really which the worst is. You know, it's pretty bad stuff. And so I went into basically isolation, you might say. I mean, I was out, but I went into myself is what I'm saying. And the sad thing, I guess, or not the sad thing, I don't know. The difficult thing about it was that coming back, there was no VA system. I felt at that time that people in general, as far as because I was a Marine or any military personnel, that people didn't want to have anything to do with you. I literally had people that I ran into on the streets occasionally that, oh, you're in the Marine Corps. I don't want to go out with you. I've heard about people. I heard about what you guys did. You know, it was the assumption was if you went over there, you killed babies. That was just kind of an automatic or whatever. You know, it was just that was the tag. That was the generalization. And there was no basically support system that I was aware of at the time, although I found out later groups like Bill's talking about Veterans Against the War and other organization like that, had been formed. And basically, from my recollection of discussion with people, that was one of the main reasons they were formed, was to be a support system for veterans coming back to kind of help them get back, or, you know. And so that was where it stayed, down inside of me. Had a very difficult time finding work for a long time, or holding a job, not finding work. I found work. But it, part of the symptoms of the PTSD is very difficult to stay anywhere very long. Hypervigilance, what they call it. It's just this lack of trust, control, everything else. I went through probably 22 jobs in a matter of 4 years. And I've used my body in other ways. I mean, it was truly just trying to escape from what I was in. Anyway, that is where Vietnam took me. And I think it's important to remember, I think, for everybody, as people look to get involved, that, number one, the people that are lying to you are lying to those veterans, too. And the fact is, they're dealing with a lot more issues than you will be. Is because they experience and everything. And a lot of times they end up, just like it's been mentioned before, they come back from the war and they're left on their own, to their own devices. And so that is something that I think, as far as when we talk about organizing, when you talk about outreach, things like that, I think that is the thing that people have to look at. Talking to those people that are in the military, those are potentially people that will be going over or coming back, educating them, helping them to understand, and hopefully them being a part of a bigger movement. With that, I want to move on real quickly here. I don't want to spend a lot of time on my activities at Staley or anything else, but I do want to mention just real quickly a couple of things about Staley's, and I think most people here are pretty familiar with that without going over a lot. But I think the one thing that I want to mention this up, because I think it's a tie into what has been going on and what is going on right now. Staley's, I was personally involved in that. I know what it felt like. To me, it was like another war. And it was like I was fighting for my life to survive. It's tough being locked out for three and a half years, trying to exist on $60 a week with a family. And thank goodness there were a lot of people out there that helped financially and soften that a little bit. But it still is a very traumatic thing to go through. But the thing is, it wasn't just Staley's. Joe mentioned that I was a road warrior. Basically, road warrior just simply being someone that traveled around the country, network with other people, etc., to garner support, to get the message out. And as I traveled around the country, well, I should just start in Decatur for those who weren't aware of it. At the time that we went out, were locked out, at that time, of course, Caterpillar went out. Not too long after that, and not too long after that, Firestone went out. And this is just in the community of Decatur. The other thing is which a lot of time, because of the length of those struggles and everything, that a lot of people don't maybe quite remember. I remember coming up to a meeting up here with some folks at the ISO and some other organization, a solidarity meeting. It was getting together, and we were talking about the war zone. The war zone, and that war zone at that time was not only Decatur, but if you went south, the miners were on strike. And if you went out of Decatur and you went north, there were other Caterpillar plants that were on strike. And at that time, at that particular time, there was 25,000 people on strike. 25,000 people, the corporations that were doing quite well, that were making a lot of money, had decided that, hey, we can make more money. And it didn't matter what people went through or what they suffered. because Staley's was in a struggle when we went through what we went through, but the same thing was going on with all those other people. 25,000 families were directly affected by those strikes, lockouts, etc. But as I traveled around the country, it was quite clear that it wasn't just regionalized just to Illinois, but as you went out of Illinois at that time, there were clearly fights going on throughout the country. And when we talk about sometimes today, and I think it's kind of a little bit apropos just to kind of look backwards a little bit, but in the last three decades, there has been a horrible shift of workers' jobs. Jobs that have been eliminated in this country and taking somewhere overseas. Jobs that have been eliminated over in this country and turned over to technology. Those who remained with jobs, just like Staley's, the big offer was, well, you got 800 people there, there's going to be 300 when this is all said and done. The 500 will be replaced with scabs. That was their good deal. And that's what people deal with every day when they go into negotiation. It isn't about negotiations. It is about them trying to dictate to you what you're going to have. Now, the unfortunate thing about this is all too often, we hear about the stage, the Caterpillar, the mine workers, and those. Those are just a few. What we don't hear about is those who basically accept it and go on. And I guess the message behind that is that, and this isn't about middle class, this is about workers. And that's what classism is about. It doesn't matter if you're driving a school bus, it doesn't matter if you're working out in the fields, picking cherries or vegetables, or if you're working in the service sector, it doesn't really matter. We all suffer. We're all being dragged down. Now, keeping that in mind, it didn't just happen yesterday. I mean, it's all too easy that Bush did it. Now, I'm not asking you to vote for Bush, or don't get me confused, anybody out there, or anything else. But what I'm saying, that is the way of life in this country, and has been for one hell of a long time. There has not been a break. I mean, when it comes down to it. I mean, there may be in some sectors. But the fact is, there is a war that is continuously waged against workers. And workers, again, but it's being waged also not only people who are actively working at, quote, a job. It's being waged at the elderly. It's being waged at those who are on fixed incomes. I'm talking about people with disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. Right. It is people who are poor, right, the working poor. Mm-hmm. And it's a war. It doesn't come out and people have strikes. It's a war where somebody signs off a piece of legislation like they did under the Clinton administration as well as Reagan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what do? They pull out the welfare. There were people going to work. I remember reading about it in New York where people were going in and taking the jobs. They were laying off one group of people. They were sending people who had formerly been on welfare. They were going in for less, and when it was all said and done, they were making less money than they were on welfare because they didn't have insurance anymore, or Medicare, whatever. They weren't getting help with food, etc. And they were actually making, the city was making money. And workers were losing jobs. We're all being sucked in and sucked down. Now, I think this whole thing, again, it isn't about it just happened yesterday. And it's been mentioned. The wars in South America, etc. The exploitation. And as we all know, that didn't just start yesterday. It's been going on. It is the policy. It's been going on. I mean, formally, since the Spanish-American War. In the last 100 years plus. Very clear. Now, what is scary right now which really, in a way, just kind of blows my mind, is the fact that after this is the way life is, that the tragedy on 9/11, and I will not say anything else than the fact that it was a horrible tragedy. And I felt like everybody else, the sorrow for those people, a compassion for their family. But the fact is, wasn't it a red flag when people, and it happened, believe me, anybody that remembers those first weeks, those first months, people walking around with fear, people grieving, and the people, the politicians, all of a sudden bring out 1,200 pages, you know, dusted it off, threw it in front of Congress, it's called a Patriot Act, and bam, it's in law. Nobody had time to read it or anything else, but that's supposedly was presented like all of a sudden, well, we did this, and you know, because this happened. They tried to do it, I mean, during the Oklahoma bombings. I mean, every time something happened, it's always. But this was the biggest scare that went, and they went for the whole ball of wax. The other thing is, in this new era of capitalism, global capitalism, that it's taken a different spin in the fact that I think that the President of the United States in the Pax Americana comes out and says, we are the superpower. Not only we're the superpower, but you don't even pretend, don't even resist in any shape or form. I mean, when it comes down to it, he has self-appointed, or the administration has self-appointed themselves, God. But the fact is that they have the right, is what they're saying to the people of the United States and to the world, that we will make the decision how much piece of the pie everybody's going to get. And believe me, if you disagree with that, and I mean that's them saying it, if you disagree with that, we will take any measures to stop you, to take you out, etc. That is the era, I think, that we're in right now. It's not new, it's just much more arrogant. It's out front. There's no questions about it. You know, George is on his horse. And it is very clear what his intents are. No different than anybody in the past. I don't want to confuse that. Believe me, no different. But the fact is that they have gotten to the place that we don't have to do the cloak and daggers and the smoke and screens and everything like that. Also, I think it just amazes me, the other thing is that the media has bought into this completely. Not that the media isn't bought and paid for, but there is no questioning at any level, basically, from the major media. I mean, George speaks, it's like God coming down and handing, you know, the tablets. You know, there it is. That's the way it is, and just believe it. They got weapons of mass destruction, and okay, you know, they got it. We got any proof? Well, you know, George said it, and George wouldn't say it unless it's true. And that's what people are buying. And that's scary. Not everybody. I'm not saying everybody. But people are buying it. I mean, the fact is, the good news, more people oppose it now than they did at 9/11. The bad news is there's still approximately 50 to 55% of the people in this country that is willing to sign their name off, their send their children off to war or whatever, just because George said it. And that's scary. And yeah, and that's scary. That's real scary. Now, I think that there is no question that I feel that most people here, without getting into, you know, pointing everything out, that I think most people are kind of clear on what's going on in the war. I think that the biggest thing that I would underline tonight more than anything else is the fact is connecting the dots. Connecting them for yourself and connecting them for other people. That it is not separate. We don't live in a world by ourselves, and no war has ever been waged on us. Not in the sense that the people haven't been suffering and people haven't been losing their jobs, etc. To me, that's war. Believe me. Go through it. You'll agree with me. It's pretty damn rough waking up in the morning and not knowing if you're going to get a paycheck or where the hell's what's going to happen the next day. That's a hell of a life to live. That war has been there. And it is important, I think, without re-discussing some of the points that Brenda was covering and did so quite eloquently, to take that message out, to go out beyond just simply passing a resolution. Yeah, a resolution is a first step. People need to get to that point, but it needs to go further than that. One of the things that we seen when we were at Staley's, it was the fact that when we went out and we organized people and we shut the company down during the in-plant strategy, etc., it wasn't because of the fact somebody sent a paper out and said, you know, that would be a good thing to do. People went out and talked to people. People went out and formed committees. People exchanged ideas and trying to kind of get some kind of agreement how to do this. And it was then about direct action. It was then about confronting the bosses. It was about realizing the fact is that you're the one that pushes the buttons. You're the one that controls the show. But that's what it really gets down to. And that's the message that needs to be taken out. That it is a war on Iraq that is going on. There is no minimizing what is happening there. One of the impressions that I just have a hard time getting out of my mind, that is probably one of the most horrific things since I've returned to Vietnam, when I turned on CNN back in 1991 and I watched Baghdad being bomb after bomb after bomb and arcs going off. And you know what? You can't even imagine. As horrible as that looks, but I could imagine because I was there. I seen it happen in Nam. I seen what those kind of bombs can do. I could feel the ground vibrating. I could hear the explosions. I could feel everything just shaking. And I wasn't having it dropped on me. I can't imagine what happened or how those people went through that. But what was more horrifying, when we realized in a matter of less than $100, the 40,000 people were immediately killed as a result of those bombings. 40,000 people. Not to minimize the World Trade Center, but gee whiz, that is over 10 times as many people killed. And that doesn't talk about the people, though, after the 96 hours were up over the next week or month, that died from wounds, etc., which are related to another 100,000. And it doesn't talk about the devastation that's been done since 1991 with sanctions and boycotts. That's what's horrifying when you put all this in perspective. And what's even more horrifying, what did George say? I mean, stop and think about it. When he was giving all his speeches, especially on the early on, be prepared. You got to have the guts to stand in there, folks. You got to be ready to go. This is not something we're going to back down on. It may take generations. It'll be your children, as well as you, that have to commit to this battle, this front against terrorism. And that's scary, because that says that the war will is there's been a declaration of war on the world for an indefinite period of time. In closing, there was something I want to share with you that most people, or some people, maybe all of you have, but it was something that just really struck me. But we talk about direct actions. Price is being paid by what people do. Recently, I believe it was in England, if I get that straight. Yeah. Two men who were driving or were supposed to drive a locomotive refused to do the engineering. Now, They did it as a conscientious objector. I'm not aware of laws, et cetera, in Britain, et cetera. I'm not really. But the point is, I got to believe that they knew when they did that there was a potential they were going to lose their jobs. In fact, a real good chance that they were going to lose their jobs. But what they didn't want to be involved in was taking that train down there, loading up munitions, and driving it down somewhere else, because those munitions were going to be used to bomb Baghdad. We need to look at that and say, hey, when we start talking, that we have to realize that we need to take steps. Sometimes those are not steps that we, you know, would look forward to doing. Nobody appreciates spending time in jail because you do a sit-in or whatever, whatever that action may be. But the fact is, direct action in the plants, in the federal buildings, in the streets, et cetera, that is what is going to happen. I don't know that it's going to stop the bombs being dropped. I mean, the damn airplanes may be underway right now. And I don't want that to happen. But I also know that this is just the beginning of this new era. And we have to get that message out, and we have to be prepared to take whatever steps are necessary, that it needs to be our epoch, that we need to get out there and get in front of the capitalists and show them that workers do control this country. They do control the world. Thank you very much.